immediately in the process.
Thank you, Your Honor. I was appointing. My name is Bill Peterson. I'm a lawyer from the law firm of Snell & Wilburn, and I represent the appellant and the cross appellee in this case, Sierra Pacific Power Company. 3 weeks ago, or 3 weeks from now, basically from today, there was a huge flood in the Truckee River, but a near flood that destroyed the Farragut Dam, and we're still litigating that case today.
Yeah, I have sort of a basic question here, and that is whether the parties have made any use of our mediation unit. This is a case all about money, and, you know, not about prison term or anything like that. Is that something that would be beneficial?
I think not, Your Honor, and the reason I say that is this. As you know, this is the second time this case has been in the Ninth Circuit. The first time, probably not coincidentally, the same question was posed. I could have answered differently the first time. And in fact, the case was adjourned, or we did go back to mediation.
Okay, you don't need to tell us the details. It sounds like it's fair enough if the parties are not interested. Basically, as I understand it, there are two choices. You can either rebuild the dam and get full coverage, or you can decide not to rebuild and get the cash value. Elect between those. Is that a correct understanding of the two options?
I would agree with you 100%. I'm not sure that the carriers would agree. I think that's part of their cross-appeal. That's your position.
That's correct.
This was brought up at the end of my appeal at counsel.
Yeah, but you're certainly not seeking to change what you think the district court has held.
No.
Which is what Judge Graham was saying.
I'm not.
No. So the only thing you're complaining about in your appeal is the depreciation finding.
It is the depreciation finding, Your Honor, and then it slightly alludes to the cross appeal because the judge in this case,
he corrected it.
So
whether he's wrong or right or wrong, you're not seeking to change the judge.
I only raised it because he corrected it after I filed my notice of appeal, but under Rule, I believe it's 62, he can do that.
So let's just focus on depreciation.
Yes, very good.
There was testimony by the insurance adjuster that he had applied a 50% rate of depreciation.
Yes.
The dam at 5% to the West Point.
Yes.
Windfall, I'm sorry.
The West Point.
Set aside 50% to 5% he testified to. He also testified that your clients agreed to it. And the first appeal, I think, suggests there's no evidence of an agreement. Only apart from the agreement, there was testimony in the record, unobjected to, at trial, by this adjuster that it was a 50% depreciation rate and 5% rate. Wasn't that enough evidence for the judge to make his finding?
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head.
That's the second time I've done it this
morning. I think. I want to make sure I hold 5 minutes there with you. If I could put it in the language that I understand best, so I think what you're saying is, isn't there substantial evidence? Isn't that testimony substantial evidence?
Right. It ain't much, but it's 70%.
Yeah, I'd say it ain't much, but it's something. Okay. Well, there's two things about that. One is that very evidence was addressed by the previous panel.
That's why I phrased my question that way. The previous panel said no, there was no agreement.
They said more than that.
Well, I'm not sure they did. That's why I need your help. I think the previous panel said you said there was an agreement with respect to ECV.
Well, what they said
the first time through insurers, you said there was an agreement as to ECV.
Yes.
That's wrong. There was an agreement.
Right.
But apart from whether there was an agreement, did Mr. Jeremy testify that he calculated a 50% depreciation rate and 5% for the wing, and they agreed to it? So cut off the part that says that they agreed to it. What did the first trial say? First appeal say with respect to his
It says two things, but before I begin, I want to disabuse you of the fact that there was a calculation. There was no calculation. Well, it's just a bunch of claim adjusters looking at a bunch of
stuff. I know. I said it was very thin, but he did use the word calculation.
Okay, but back to my first point. The Ninth Circuit, the previous panel said two things about this, and they addressed that very point. You are correct. They said Judge Hicks is wrong in concluding that there was an agreement. In fact, Judge Hicks also said there wasn't an agreement. But they did address that very piece of evidence. They addressed two pieces of evidence in the previous panel. One was the alleged agreement, and the second was the email about the 50% depreciation. And what the previous panel said about that evidence was that that evidence was merely a recommendation by the broker.
Right, that's the broker's. I understand it.
Okay,
put all that stuff aside. I'm nonetheless left when I look at the record in the first trial. And I start out by saying, it's not a lot. But Mr. Jeremy says, we calculated a rate of 50%. We just go into the foundation on it, but there's no objection. And then they agree to it. And there's also some separate evidence about the broker sending an email about it. So focus just on what Mr. Jeremy said.
Okay, I see you're not impressed with my first argument. The point that I was trying to make was, I believe the point you already made, which was, thin as it may be, don't forget it has to be substantial evidence, which is evidence upon which a reasonable person could come to a conclusion. And whether that is or is not, I don't believe that it is. But secondly, and this may be more importantly to your point, and that is, it doesn't really matter what they say, because the depreciation methodology and the amount is not a question of fact. It's a question. Methodology is a question of law. And so it would be wrong for the judge to say, I find this to be substantial evidence because a broker or an adjuster said, I think it's 50%, when in fact the law says, this is how you determine depreciation. That is what the judge should be doing. The methodology is, he doesn't get to pick the methodology and say that the adjuster.
So under your argument, let me just work this a little bit. The dam was rebuilt, originally built with 1890-something.
It was rebuilt, completely moved
in 1960. Not yet 60. The first one lasted about 60 years.
Is that right?
Yeah, I guess that's right. And we're 30-something years into the second one.
Right.
How should the judge have calculated the depreciation?
He should have done it in the way that is laid out in the cases, in the commentary, in the recognized appraisal methodology, and there's no dispute. There's absolutely no dispute about it.
But I should say, you argued there was no depreciation at all.
I did, but that's because I did, and the judge rejected that.
Okay, so let's assume that there is some depreciation. Just tell me how he should have calculated it. He should have done it the right way. Just mathematically tell me how he should have done it.
The math is this. The math is laid out by the Ninth Circuit in the previous panel. Actual cash value equals fair market value. Right in the previous order.
Minus depreciation.
No. Actual cash value equals fair market value. Fair market value equals full replacement cost minus depreciation.
Counsel, the one thing that I haven't heard discussed in your colloquy with Judge Hurwitz is, if I'm remembering it correctly, Jeremy testified that the 50% depreciation and the other numbers were not objected to, that these were agreed upon numbers. And I think that the court relied on that to a great extent. So what effect does that agreement or lack of protest at the time have on our analysis?
Well, the judge could consider the evidence because I didn't object to it. But that doesn't mean that he's entitled to rely.
Well, no. But it was more than that you didn't object to the evidence. The testimony itself was that there was agreement as to the numbers that were being testified to, which is not about the evidence. It's about the calculation.
Well, the High Circuit has already said that there was not an agreement.
But the judge also found there was a lack of objection.
Right.
And he documented that by going back to the record and saying, look, I'm not saying there was an agreement. It said, but I do think there was a lack of objection.
So I agree.
Okay, so with Judge Graber's question, Ms. Lyle.
He's going to say it better than I was.
doesn't Jeremy's testimony, who calculated this, and his testimony that the other side didn't object to it, together, isn't that substantial evidence?
No. No. The judge is not, the judge, I'm certain all of you judges, I know the trial court judge, done condemnation cases before. It doesn't matter what the evidence comes in on a condemnation. When you're evaluating is covered by the evidence code in California. Valuation is the same valuation methodology used whether it's a tax case, whether it's a condemnation case, or whether it's an actual cash value case. The methodology is clear. And the judge can hear all kinds of evidence on that. But he is not free, the judge is not free to pick a different methodology than the methodology required by the law.
So applying the methodology, and I'm still not sure you told me how it works.
Well, I'd love to do that.
Well, applying the methodology required by the law, tell me what the depreciation was.
I'm telling you the depreciation is nominal.
I know, but the trial judge rejected that in our prior panel.
He's wrong.
The prior panel was wrong, too.
No. This prior panel did not say that. What the prior panel said was, Mr. Peterson, you are wrong when you say that we may not deduct depreciation. And I agree, you may deduct depreciation, but the question that is posed to the trial court is, how much? That is the question. I never told the Ninth Circuit. I never told the trial judge.
And you really think that it's reasonable to conclude, I mean, just as a overview matter, that a 60-year-old dam has basically no depreciation?
Yes, that's the methodology. Look at it this way.
Well, you were the one who said it has to be actual value, which looks at depreciation. So
look at it this way. Look at it. I'd like to go back really to the math. And the math, because the math lays it out very clearly.
The real world is problematic when you look at a 60-year-old dam.
You've got, and I'll let you do this in a second, but I want to just focus on Judge Graber's question. You've got a dam that was built in 1960, I think.
Yeah, for the Winter Olympics, they had to move it.
Creosote logs. It's 40, how old at the time? Almost 40 years old.
More older than that, 50, 60, maybe.
I think it's
not 60, but it's 50.
It's got all. Oh, you're talking about when the flood occurs.
Yeah, it's not 50.
Years old. Well, 34.
I think it's the same.
It's old.
If you're under 40, you should.
Yeah,
right. So, do you think
34?
Do you think that's exactly the same? A dam of that age has exactly the same actual cash value to a buyer than a brand new one would?
I do. Because they go on for 100 years, and that's also an.
But they go on for 100 years.
Like, this is not.
It's 34% depreciated.
This is not some piece of equipment that somebody keeps in a backyard or a construction yard. You're talking about a power plant.
Yeah, we
which is.
I'm sorry. Can you finish your answer?
Oh, I was just going to say, it's in my brief where these things go over 100 years. This is they're regularly maintained. They're checked every day. They're always watched. They produce electricity every single day, which is why they're maintained in tip-top condition. The judge agreed it was in tip-top condition. That wasn't in dispute here.
What evidence did you put on that there was no depreciation?
The evidence I put on was also recited by the trial judge and disregarded by him. It's right in his order. What he said was, okay, so it was the dam was perfectly well maintained, and it is operating at full functionality of what his orders. He says what you guys are saying right now, which is basically, okay, I agree with all that, but that still doesn't account for the age and the life expectancy of the dam. So he falls back on exactly what you all are saying, and that is wrong, because the age and the life expectancy of the dam are not factors you consider in depreciation analysis. It's fair market value.
Did you have any evidence that you put on expert evidence of that conclusion?
No, Your Honor, what I was arguing to the court was that the value of that dam, if you use the three appraisal methodologies, and I'm sure that you're familiar with reproduction cost, income analysis, or comparable sales. Those are the ways you do it. If you apply those factors, and you look at the evidence that was presented, that I presented from Craig Williams, this dam is in tip-top shape. It's maintained every day. It diverts water and produces 2.7 megawatts of electricity every single day. That the value of that dam is precisely the same as if you had taken it out and built it with gold. if you build a gold dam, it wouldn't be worth one penny more than what it was worth in a creosote dam, because it produces the same income and it has the same function of diverting water and protecting the water rights, which is why I was telling the trial judge, please use your correct methodology.
But didn't you argue, and I'm trying to find your briefs here, so I'll find them later. Didn't you argue to the Ninth Circuit the previous time through that what you should recover is $19,800,000 as actual cash value?
Because that's the reproduction cost of the dam.
Right. So therefore, you argued to the Ninth Circuit that no depreciation should be taken off of that note.
Well, I didn't really. I said,
well, no. You said, here's $19,800,000. That's the estimated reproduction cost. I should get it all. And the Ninth Circuit said in the prior appeal, no. The court has to calculate depreciation.
No. What the Ninth Circuit said was Judge Hicks, the policy language says actual cash value with proper deduction for depreciation. With proper. What's the proper deduction for depreciation?
Your argument to the Ninth Circuit was zero. Was
because the value of that dam is the same. It has not depreciated.
And the Ninth Circuit nonetheless remanded for Judge Hicks to calculate depreciation.
And it says demand for determination of the actual cash value based on reducing the replacement cost of $19,800,000 by the appropriate depreciation.
So I only have a couple of minutes. This may put it together for you. Everybody has bought a car. I'm sure you've all bought a brand new car. You buy that car, let's say it's a brand new Cadillac, you drive it off a lot. You decide, 6 hours later, oh, I don't really like this car. You return that car, you decide to sell that car. It is in precisely the same shape as it was. You couldn't tell the difference from the unused car to the used car. That car has depreciated $5,000, $6,000, $10,000. Why? It is because you take the math, which is the same math which applies to this dam, which is what is the cost of this thing? It is the reproduction cost less depreciation equals fair market value. The fair market value of that Cadillac is $15,000. You paid $20,000 5 hours earlier. Well, how much is it depreciated? $5,000. It's the same formula you use in every single case.
Counsel, I think we understand your position. And if you want to save rebuttal time, you might wish to do that. Thank you.
Sorry to be so forceful.
That's okay. Yes. We gather.
It's effective. Don't worry.
Feel free. We're doing the same up here.
Let me straighten a couple things out here first. To answer the first question you asked, Judge Graber, the policy says we will pay replacement cost. The policy then says if you don't replace within 2 years, we will pay actual cash value, which is measured by replacement cost.
Right, and the 2 years in the previous iteration of this appeal was held to be actual. So the 2 years is gone. So with the 2 years gone, there's still the two options. You can either actually rebuild it or you can get a cash amount.
I phrase it slightly differently. You can always rebuild it, and even if you haven't yet rebuilt it, you still get an actual cash value. So it's not a choice.
Okay.
Either or.
It's a choice to rebuild or not.
Yes. Okay. So we've been arguing a lot about the first appeal here. As I read your cross-appeal briefs, you sort of seize on a misstatement that the trial judge made in the second go-round and say if they do choose to rebuild, all they get is 19A.
Right.
And the first time through, that's not what the judge held. And we affirmed the judge ruling the first time through.
Now,
the judge made that the policy is clear, is it not, that what you get if you rebuild are the actual costs of rebuilding.
Well, that's what his panel said.
I respectfully disagree because Judge Foote doesn't read what the panel said. The panel said, in a remand for a determination of the ACV.
That's with respect to the ACV.
Reducing the replacement cost of $19.8 million.
I know.
That's only for the cash.
That's for the ACV. When one does an ACV using estimated replacement cost as a surrogate for fair market value, you can't know what the actual cost of construction is.
Actually, you can, Your Honor, because the policy tells you what. The policy says that you have to determine the point at which, with due diligence and dispatch, the insurer could have replaced.
I understand, but we had a previous appeal in this matter. One of the things you appealed the previous time was the argument, was their judge's ruling that they could get the actual cost of reconstruction where they took the belt. And the court rejected your appeal on that issue. I respectfully disagree.
Well, it says that they also, the last time through, affirmed the holding that the coverage available under the policy includes the costs necessary to comply with current regulatory requirements and building codes if there is an actual replacement undertaken. And that has nothing to do with the ACV.
Well, I think we're kind of off on
we're off on your cross appeal.
Well, I understand you're on my cross appeal. That's fine. And I'm happy to deal with my cross appeal. Two things happen in this situation. One, the court has to make a determination as to when the property could have been rebuilt with due diligence and dispatch. The trial court made that finding of fact. Yes, supplemental excerpt of record, page 7. Finding of fact 26G, the trial court said the actual time necessary to rebuild and replace the Fair End Dam with diligence and dispatch is 3 years following this court's findings of fact.
You're not challenged. You're no longer contending that they didn't do it within the appropriate time period.
Right. I understand that the trial court and the appellate court ruled that we
lost on that issue.
Okay.
So the only question is, should they choose to rebuild, which I doubt that they will, but should they choose to rebuild, do they merely get 19.8, or do they get whatever it actually costs to rebuild?
They get 19.8.
I'm asking you a different one. That's the question, is it not?
Well, isn't
that the question before us?
No. That's one of the questions, but the biggest question is, well, how is this within the mandate? How is any of this within the mandate?
Well, that's my problem, see, because I think it's not within the mandate. You lost the first time trial on this issue.
That's my view of what we did last time, too, because I understood our previous decision to say that if there's a replacement, not only do you pay the full value, you pay the full replacement cost if it's rebuilt, and even if it's bigger than it would have been because of new regulations and ordinances of fees and so forth.
But all those costs are already in the 19.8.
That's an estimate, is it not?
Your Honor,
is it not an estimate, yes or no?
It was a fact at the time of the trial.
That's not the question.
we can waste time reconstructing this, but it is an estimate. Nobody knows how much it will actually cost.
It was called estimated cost.
Right? I'll give you an estimate. Okay, thank you. So, and we use that estimate because there's nobody out there buying dams. Otherwise, we could find fair market value by comparable sales. So when we look at actual cash value, the trial court says, and we agreed, we said the first time through, use estimated replacement cost as a surrogate for actual cash value, and then take the depreciation off it. That's the other part of this appeal. But we didn't disturb the trial court's findings with respect to replacement, the actual reproduction cost. The
actual reproduction cost of the time that is relevant for $19.8 million, Your Honor. The problem here is...
That's not what we said, though.
I think it is what you said, quite frankly. That's what the trial court said, and nobody appealed it. The trial court made that finding of fact 26G.
This is what it says. We affirm the district court's finding the coverage available under the policy includes costs necessary to comply with current regulatory requirements and building codes.
That's already in the 19.8.
No, that's not. That is, the 19.8 is already dealt with from that. Anyway.
Well, I will tell you, as a matter of fact, Your Honor, the 19.8 includes all the code regulation requirements to meet new codes. Otherwise, this was a Creosote Dam. It wouldn't have cost $19.8 million to put back a Creosote Dam. This has got all the regulations in it. It's got fish ladders, so the fish can swim up crossstream and not get diverted by the dam. And the full function of this dam is to divert water downstream. That's all it does.
Okay, just a minute. Maybe we just have a different view of this, but I'm reading the trial court's findings. Just back to the SCR. Policies which are provided SCR with full replacement cost coverage subject to the sublimit of liability. Then you can we can forget those two systems that we can apply here. The judge did not find the first time through that full replacement cost coverage was 19.8. He found that the estimated cost of replacement was 19.8.
Go back one page, Your Honor. Go back one page.
Yeah.
Look at 26G.
The actual time necessary is 3 years.
Time to rebuild with due diligence and dispatch, and that's what the policy says.
Time and amount are two different questions. The findings about time don't undermine the part that Judge Hurwitz
is making. Maybe they still have to focus on some specific period of time. The question is what is the actual reproduction cost at that point in time? Well, let's go to the 50% rule.
But the point is,
I can see why we've been litigating this for 20 years.
$75, where it's going to cost $50 million to replace and give the increased costs. And how long does this go on? How long do they have to do this? The point of these policies is we don't know exactly what the cost is, but they get an estimate, they present it, and they have a replacement cost.
Yeah,
and if it actually came out, we would have known.
Well, but it's hard to cast blame with this one, unfortunately, on their side. They came up, they had a bid after 16, back in those days. And you offered a million too. So it was
obviously wrong in our view of the policy, but it wasn't
that. I know, but I mean, so both sides have been wrong. So don't, I mean,
I'm wearing a white hat, but it's gray. It's like my hair.
It's not, I do what I was suggesting is it's not all that useful to argue the equities here since they're basically here on both sides.
I agree with that. You want to talk about the 50%?
Well, I do. And here's, so you can repeat what I said to your colleague. I think all we said the first time through was that there was no agreement as to ACP. And I think that fairly can be read that we also found that there was no agreement as to the depreciation cost. But, okay, so is it enough for us to find depreciation for your adjuster just to say, well, I calculated only 50%, because that's really all you got.
Well, here's the problem, Your Honor.
It's your burden, right? We do agree it's your burden to show depreciation.
I will accept that for the purpose of the
circuit. How did you meet that burden? Is that a way
to put on evidence that was uncontroverted? Patrick Jeremy, a guy who's been in this business for I don't know how many years, he testified to it. You know, he's retired now, so I'm sure by that time he was 40. Sat down with them and went through the numbers.
Well,
the fact that it wasn't agreement doesn't mean that it
no, I failed. No, I understand. But so I'm asking the same question in your bullet frame. Because I've read all the testimony in the record on this. It's about this.
The problem is that Sierra put all its eggs in the there is no depreciation.
That's right. But they had no burden. I agree with you that they lost on the no depreciation issue.
But there's no converted evidence. The only evidence in the record is 50% and 5%.
Fair enough. We agree on each other with each other so far. The question is that evidence sufficiently probing? Given the fact that it's really just the adjuster saying, well, I calculated it at 50%.
Well, is that enough? It was uncontroverted. So it is enough. It's more than a scintilla. The trial court accepted it. No need to disabuse you. I need to disabuse you of one more fact. And that fact is this dam was not functional on January 1, 1997. In 1996, in June, the flume failed. The flume collapsed. The flume is that piece that dam diverts the water into the flume. The flume hangs off the side of the pumps or whatever's there to increase the speed so it goes to the power and generates more power because it's going faster than the river's going. Then the water comes back out into the river.
Okay, so let's assume for a moment that you're right, that there's enough here for the judge to find a 50% and 5% rate, and all the calculations of that are just mathematical. They didn't tell me math would be involved, but it is. Okay, why then shouldn't there be prejudgment interest on the ACV? Not the actual recovery costs, actual reproduction costs, but on the ACV. The judge found, as a matter of fact, it was 19.8. It was 16.8 when they first are staying there.
He rounded it up.
Yes, right. But he rounded it up. And he only applied it to the previous number. He only applied the prejudgment interest to the $16 million-something. That was a fixed number. In the insurance company's view, the depreciation was a fixed number. Why shouldn't you have written a check, or at least offered to pay the ACB of that amount back in 2001?
In your view of the world, this is an easily calculable number, and yet you only offered $1.2 million.
Well, from the mere fact that we ended up back prevailing on that issue, which, quite frankly, I still think is here, but it's been decided, so I can't argue that anymore.
We all wish the previous panel had taken this case back, but that's
the problem is that the time to have asked for prejudgment interest was in April of 2008, but this case was tried.
See, I agree with you with respect to actual reproduction costs, but what happened in 2008 is that Sierra Pacific got a negative verdict. The judge's verdict was you're entitled to $1.2 million is ACV, but they've already paid you more than that.
We paid them well.
We
paid them that amount.
Yeah, you paid so that you get zero.
Less deductible.
Yeah, you get zero. That's right. When you take out the deductible, you get no soup, Sierra Pacific. You get zero. It's hard to fault them for not asking for prejudgment interest on zero.
But it was never planned. It was.
It's a no prejudgment interest. It's a matter of law. It's a post-trial issue.
But the U.S. Supreme Court says it's also an element of damage.
Right, but you have to plead it and prove it. Now, our cases say that you raise the issue appropriately in a post-trial motion, Rule 59e motion. And with respect, I think to the extent that the other side's arguing that they get prejudgment interest on whatever it actually costs to replace the name if they choose to do that, I think they're wrong because there was a judgment the first time about actual reduction costs and they never sought prejudgment interest. But this time, it's hard to fault them in my mind for not seeking it when they get zero. Can't they wait until they see it when they get a positive reward before they seek it?
But it goes all the way back until the pleadings. They never pled a claim for breach of contract. They never pled a claim for damages. This case was never about damages. It was for a declaration as to how much something cost. When the judge got it back the second time, he decides, well, I'm going to enter judgment in a monetary amount. And I'm going to give a prejudgment.
Actually, their complaint the first time through sought both declaratory relief and recovery under the policies.
That's the place you ask for damages.
Assume that you're wrong about the waiver argument. Tell me why there shouldn't be prejudgment interest here.
Well,
if they haven't waived it, do they get prejudgment interest on the ACV less depreciation?
I can't come up with another argument.
Okay, so it's a timing argument. Waiver is the dispositive argument.
The timing argument, yes, Your
Honor. Okay. I'm sorry, why are we taking you off course?
They serve to rebut Mr. Peterson's undoubtedly stellar argument on the cross appeal. So,
if he talks about the cross appeal, you may, and if he doesn't talk about the cross appeal, you're done. So that's up to you.
Well, if you have more questions on the main appeal or the cross appeal, I'm happy to address them now. Otherwise, I'll take my chances and assume he's going to say something.
Okay.
You have a real opportunity, Mr. Peters. I don't think you're going to pass it by.
Mr. Blaine, actually, are pretty good friends, so I didn't want you to know.
You must be if you spent 20 years together.
I'm not exactly sure what I'm permitted to talk about, but I want to go back to my main point, which is the math, because this is important to me.
Do the math for me. Tell me what the depreciation should be.
If it's not zero, which is right out of the Ninth Circuit, in this case, they said actual cash value equals fair market value. That's point one. They said fair market value equals reproduction cost plus depreciation. I'm sure we've all taught eighth grade algebra to our kids or grandkids. All you do is you do the equation. If you do the equation, you move the D over
the minus side to the plus side. So it's an actual cash value, it's fair market value, excuse me, it's reproduction cost minus depreciation. Depreciation equals reproduction cost minus fair market value. The math is indisputable. That is the way you figure it out.
So in your view, then there's never any depreciation?
No. I mean, there might be.
Well, but in fair market, if we're using reproduction cost as a proxy for fair market value.
No. This is not me talking. This is the Ninth Circuit talking that said.
Not you talking.
Well, I'm quoting the Ninth Circuit, and they said that it's fair market value, excuse me, it's reproduction cost minus depreciation. We know what the reproduction cost is, 19.8. We don't know what the depreciation is. But if you just do the formula.
Mike, here's my problem. That's exactly what you argued the first time, sir.
No, not it.
What you said was, give me 19.8 because nothing should be subtracted from it.
No.
Now you're saying, I can move around the pieces a little bit, but no. Give me 19.8 because nothing should be
or
subtracted.
Or minus a tiny bit.
Well, that's the point. You know, let's go back and figure out what it is.
In your view, should we remand for another trial on depreciation?
Well, I prefer that than to say the judge was right because the judge was wrong. But I think I made my point on that. I just wanted to make a couple of others maybe on that because you said something that struck me. And you said, which we doubt they will build because it's been so long. If your house burns down, what you would expect the insurance company to pay you is, look, I'll give you your fair market value for the house, or you can rebuild it if you want. If they say the fair market value is half of what it really is because of this big depreciation, what are you going to do? You're going to rebuild it, even though you don't want to. By a decision that this court makes that cuts the value of that dam in half, is that we're going to give you, you can take $8 million in cash, or you can rebuild this thing for $30 million. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to rebuild it. Maybe that's not the right decision to.
Yeah, although when I ran the math, and I don't pretend to be a mathematician, if you got the recovery that the trial court thought you should get, which was $12 million something, and apply about 20 years of prejudgment interest to it,
you had a pretty good number on
that. By the way, it seems to me you ought to want us to affirm the trial court in general.
Well,
because if we don't, you're going to go back again, and you're going to be stuck with it. So
I'm not going to buy time on that, but I think you all got the prejudgment interest in it. I think you're going to be able to head again, but we didn't get anything. I'm wondering if you can get it.
All I'm saying is that if you got what the trial judge thought this was minus depreciation plus prejudgment interest over time, you're right at the number you wanted anyway.
Thank you. Mr. Glad, there was about four words about your cross appeal, but you can respond to those four words, but only about what was said about your cross appeal.
Okay.
We normally don't have Sir Rebuttal, so I stand it into.
Okay. I do have something to say. I do want to say it.
Well, you had your opportunity on the main appeal.
Thank you very much.
The case just argued is submitted, and we appreciate both counsel's arguments and your interest this morning. So